Hello, and welcome to Eyes on Success, a weekly program of information on the ever-changing world of accessibility. Now here are the hosts of this program, Nancy Goodman-Torpey and Peter Torpey.
Hello, I'm Nancy.
And I'm Pete. Well, tablet devices are becoming more and more popular, but sometimes selecting one if you have a visual impairment, if you're either low vision or totally blind, can be a little bit tricky because you don't know exactly how it's going to work for you.
We'll speak with Robbie Sandberg of the Information Pool for Computer Technology Aimed at Blind and Partially Sighted People, whose German acronym is INCOBS, about their test results in order to help you select the tablet that's right for you. And this week, we'll focus on low vision users who use magnification and or color control. And next week, we'll continue the conversation talking about blind users who rely on speech output. But first, for our tip of the week. This week's tip comes from Robbie Sandberg and is especially applicable to people who rely on accessibility tools.
So my tip is never update your system the moment the update comes out. Because this week I've been set back using iOS 8 because there are several bugs. Especially for a lot of blind people, there are apps you can no longer use, especially navigation apps, are reacting faulty or closing on you while you're using them. And so the trick really is to wait until you get the experiences of other users who tell you if there are any problems, how big these problems are, or if everything works fine, and then update once you hear about an update fixing the update, or you know somebody telling you that it's okay to use.
And that's great advice, not just for accessibility. One of the sayings I live my life by is an upgrade isn't always, because it may be newer, but it's not always better, and they sometimes miss some bugs that make it not work as well as it used to.
Yeah, that's correct. I mean, the thing is, a lot of people, me included, they're curious as to the new features of iOS 8, and they want to find out, and they want to be among the first to be able to talk about it. But of course, the downside is, a day later, you sit there and think, I shouldn't really have done that. I should have just waited, and now I'd be able to use these apps, and I could laugh about all these other people who've updated, sitting up in the night trying to download the new operation system, and now they have to wait for 2 or 3 weeks until another update comes out. So it's always better to wait till the first comments come out.
Just in case you're wondering about how current Robbie is, we record these interviews many weeks before we air the episode based on that interview, and iOS 8 had just been released, and as I recall, Pete, you had found many of the same bugs that Robbie was complaining about.
Well, I was just thinking that I wish I had this conversation with Robbie a few weeks before we actually talked with him, because I ran into exactly that situation where I was waiting for the new update, and this was going to be wonderful with all these new features and all. And all of a sudden, I found out about all the things that were broken in accessibility for iOS 8. But I guess now we just have to be patient until things get fixed, and they slowly are as each new update happens. But it's good to wait for others to test it first sometimes.
Let's start by meeting Robbie Sandberg and learning a bit about INCOBS.
Yeah, this is Robbie Sandberg from Hamburg in Germany, and I work with a project called INCOBS, INCOBS, which is a German acronym, which roughly translates as Information Pool for Computer Technology Aimed at Blind and Partially Sighted People.
And what does INCOBS do?
What we do is we test mainly mainstream technology, like tablet PCs and smartphones and such, as to their accessibility and usability in the workplace. And then we publish test results on the web.
Is this a private organization or a government organization?
No, it's a publicly funded organization. So the INCOBS project is part of a company called DIAS, D-I-A-S, which again sort of deals with a sort of wider range of issues regarding technology for disabled people in general. And then this company, which is publicly funded, has projects like INCOBS and others which deal with loss of hearing in the workplace or the accessibility of cars to physically disabled people and so forth. So this INCOBS project is one of several publicly funded projects that this company runs at the moment.
How did you personally get involved in this?
how much time have you got? I mean, the project is based in Hamburg, and I knew some people who worked there. They were my friends. And then when the project got restarted about a year ago, I was asked to take part in it and join it for my expertise in terms of IT for blind people mainly, and sort of to add the blind angle, if you like. And so I joined.
So you are visually impaired yourself then?
I'm fully blind, yes.
And have you been since birth?
I went blind when I was 3 years old, so it's almost the same, but not quite.
So you're pretty familiar with access technology.
Oh, yeah, certainly, yeah. The INCOBS project is part of what I do for a living. The other part is I'm a self-employed IT trainer for blind and partially sighted people, mostly employees, but also private individuals.
You are listening to Eyes on Success. Success, 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 success.
This week's focus topic is the testing that INCOBS does and the results they get on the usability of tablet devices by people with low vision. And next week, we'll be covering more or less the same thing, except for blind people who rely on speech output instead of magnification, contrast, color selection, etc. We want to talk to you about some of the testing that you've been doing on tablet devices in particular for both low vision and fully blind users. And we'll be talking about the blind users' experience next week. But on this show, can you give us a brief overview of what kinds of things you test for the low vision community?
Well, for low vision people, the choice is quite difficult because there are many different products, and there's not only, say, three main operation systems, Windows, iOS, and Android, but then there are sort of sub-versions, particularly of Android, where you have companies developing their own skins, which makes it even more difficult to sort of pinpoint a particular, you know, OS and say that's the one you want. So what we test is, just to give one example, how the Zoom function works. Is there one? How well does it work? Can it be switched on and off easily? Does it maybe overlap other controls so that once someone zooms in, they can't find the necessary controls anymore and so forth? So, and we test this, as I said, by just assigning basic tasks to the test so that we can then see whether someone is able to complete the task or not, and if not, where are the problems?
So I would hope, although perhaps not assume, that somebody developing a magnification system would test themselves and make sure that they're not obscuring important controls when they invoke the magnification. Do you actually find systems that have these kind of show-stopping errors?
Oh, yeah, certainly. I mean, what you just said would be the ideal case, you know, if people always thought through 100% of, you know, what they did, then that would be perfect. But for instance, the Windows device we tested, Windows 8, this has a magnifying option. I don't really know what it's called in English, but the thing is, of the three systems we tested, that works the least well because exactly what I said is happening there. Once you switch it on, in some situations, it overlaps controls to maybe send a message or to save a note or something. So you really have to zoom out in order to find this control again. But then, of course, it's too small for the user to see. So that's a really silly thing that prevents one from fluent, you know, work with this device.
You would think after all of these versions of Windows that Microsoft would be more sensitive to some of these issues.
Would you? Sometimes you're presented with these half-baked solutions that they don't really have low vision people to test this with themselves. They just look at it and say, well, if I zoom in, you know, the font gets bigger, so that's fine. It works, you know. Whether it practically works when you're trying to use a mouse or whether a controller is visible or not is probably not even on their horizon. You know, that kind of a problem doesn't occur to them because they don't have to live with this disability. And you find that in all kinds of situations.
Yeah, we always say that if the developers were the users in many cases, even when developing technologies for sighted individuals, these technologies would work a lot better. Sometimes the developers just pass it off and they've never seen a real user and how they use it and what they really need to do to make their work be efficient.
Well, I totally go along with that. But of course, I mean, that applies to all kinds of consumer products. I mean, you know, the people who design trains, sometimes you ask yourself, have they ever been on a train? Do they know what it's like? You know, or planes, come to think of that. In these cases, there's not a lot of thinking involved. I think they just, I mean, especially coming back to screen readers and stuff and magnifying systems, you know, Apple, of course, has been in the forefront of this for years. And now some people like Microsoft want to, how should I say, catch up. And they just try to implement something that's not as thought through and well developed as the Apple system. But then, of course, Apple's had a few years head start. And I mean, Microsoft, they're trying to get there. And I think the more, you know, time to give them and the more feedback, then they might come up with something that's more useful. But at the moment, I wouldn't recommend a Windows 8 system.
So do you test them yourselves or do you do studies using groups of other people?
We do both. I mean, we test some of them ourselves. It's what we call an expert test. So someone who has a lot of knowledge tests something with a kind of a formula where you assign certain tasks such as, is it possible to send the mail without being able to see? Can you find the controls to add a contact and so forth? And the same thing for the sort of the basic functions of a device. So sending a mail, sending an iMessage, maybe if it's an iPhone, adding a calendar appointment, calling someone, adding a contact. So that's the one way we do it. And the other way is we have groups of people come in who have usually very little knowledge of that kind of technology. And then we ask them, can you do this particular task? And then we kind of watch what they do and document where the problems are. For instance, you ask someone to enter a password, and they're not familiar with a virtual keyboard, you know, can they find the right keys, that sort of thing. When you ask them to send a mail, is it easy for them to understand the layout of the screen and can they find the send buttons, things like that. So that's what we then document and later on put into a test result.
So you have test groups then that comprise either novice users or more experienced users, and that way you cover the whole range of usability of these various devices.
That's correct.
And what is the overall goal of these tests?
Well, the goal of the test is to show whether a particular device or an operational system is accessible to a particular target group, such as blind people. So that if you, for instance, now that mobile technology, such as tablets and smartphones, become used more and more in the workplace, whether this is something that blind and partially sighted people could also use, or, you know, if not, where are the problems? Where do the manufacturers of these operation systems have to build in aids for them to use these devices? But, it's rather more aimed at users and providers of public allowances for such devices for blind people.
To help people make decisions.
That's correct, yeah.
So we've gotten some of your upfront sort of conclusions, I suppose, about Windows versus Apple and iOS operating systems. And you also talked about Android, one of the difficulties being the many flavors by the different manufacturers. How would you compare Android overall, before we get to some of the details, to some of these other operating systems?
Well, Android is sort of in the middle between Microsoft and iOS. I mean, that is really true of devices for blind people too. But with the low vision users, it's more diverse because some things iOS can do which Android can't do. For instance, moving the zoom and so forth. Android, on the other hand, has a spot zoom, which iOS doesn't have. So in terms of usability, I think Android is sort of in the middle of the two, iOS being in front.
So we've sort of summarized the different operating systems, and I'm wondering if we can talk a little bit more in detail about how these tests ran, what devices you considered.
Well, I can tell you the devices we considered, they were, in this case, tablet PCs. I can give you the names, although the devices themselves are not really that informative. What really is decisive in these matters is the operating system. But we used, for instance, a Samsung Galaxy. We used a Sony Xperia and an Asus MemoPad, all of them running Android 4.2.2. Although in the case of Sony, they use their own skin. So again, it's kind of different from the out-of-the-box system that the others use. And then we had the Surface Pro running Windows 8.1 and an iPad running iOS 7.
So what kind of specific pros and cons did you find with each of these devices if people are looking into getting one of these OSs or tablet devices?
Well, as I said, in the case of Windows 8.1, there isn't really much to brag about. I mean, I suppose you could use it, but you wouldn't really want to waste your time doing it. You know, you might get along, but it wouldn't be a very efficient use of the thing, especially if you need it for work purposes, which is what we assume when we test, you know, that people need it for work. That's sort of the assumption that we do.
Now, when you tested Windows 8.1, I'm assuming that you used the built-in accessibility, Windows Narrator, and magnification that's built into Windows 8.1. You did not use any third-party applications. Is that correct?
Yes, I forgot to mention that. That's basically what we're aiming at, because a lot of these mainstream technologies come with built-in accessibility aids. That's what we're testing. We could install all kinds of magnification software and screen readers, and we all know that Windows machines work reasonably well with those. But what we want to test is how usable are they out of the box? You know, can a blind or a low vision person use them out of the box when they switch it on? Will they be able to use it? Will they need help? And can they fulfill basic tasks on that device using just the accessibility aids built in?
So what other specific issues did you see before we write this off?
As I mentioned before, the Android system, for instance, had what they call a spot zoom. Now, being fully blind myself, I can't really describe exactly what that does, but apparently it's a good way of quickly zooming into something that, you know, that you just want to have a look at. Maybe basically like a small magnifying glass or something. But then, of course, with the Xperia using its own skin, some of the zoom functionality wasn't available. That is available on other Android systems. So what we found basically is that, especially with low vision users, you can't say, well, that's the device you want to use, because people have different symptoms. They have different, strengths of sight, different needs, basically. So what the result really is that one needs to test two or three devices in order to work out which is the one that works best for the individual.
Because they're all just a little bit different.
They're all a little bit different. I mean, sometimes the zoom kind of drags. If you want to move it across the screen, it kind of takes a while for it to move to a different area. Sometimes the outline gets blurred a bit in some cases. I mean, most of these systems now work reasonably well, but they all have, you know, little issues here and there which could be improved, but which don't really hinder the overall use of the thing.
So I guess your advice for someone thinking about an Android-based tablet would be to test out the specific hardware and software before you actually make your purchase.
Exactly. And I would probably advise going for Android because, especially for low vision users, it has more options to change settings, to change the appearance of the magnification, rather than Apple, who don't leave you much choice, but you basically have to live with what they come up with every time they give you an update.
So that raises the question. You did say a while ago that you thought Apple did it best. What are some of the pros and cons of the Apple device?
the pros of the Apple device really lie with the use by blind users, for low vision users. An iOS device might be the right thing, but it really depends on the individual. I'm just saying that with an Android device, there are more options of changing the design.
So you talked a lot about the zoom features in these three operating systems, but for low vision users, I assume that other things are important. Contrast, how clear the display is, color selection, etc. Can you talk a little bit about the pros and cons on each of these systems with some of these other options?
Yeah, again, with iOS, you basically are, you know, left with whichever they give you with an update in terms of the contrasts, whereas on many Android devices, especially out-of-the-box Android devices, you can have more options to change colors and contrasts. So in this regard, iOS is sort of more rigid. And if the, you know, if the contrast that they give you doesn't suit you, then, well, you can try and magnify it. But what use is that if, you know, the contrast or the color scheme doesn't help you in any way? So in that case, Android would really be the better choice.
So I'm fully sighted and Pete's almost fully blind. So neither one of us ever uses the magnification, but I use my iPhone as a sighted person, but I've got all sorts of choices about brightness and contrast. And when I use any one of my e-reader apps, I have choices of whether it's white on black or black on white or a few others. Even though all of this stuff is baked into the iOS operating system, you feel that that's insufficient?
Yeah, well, it's insufficient in that it doesn't give you the individual needs of low vision users, which can be quite different. Now, I will say one thing for iOS. We found that for people who are using a magnification with the speech output, so that's saying talkback, voiceover, or narrator, in that case, iOS was better because the magnification, how can I say, concurred with the speech, and you were able to use them both at the same time and have them complement each other, whereas in Android with TalkBack, that didn't work at all well.
So you're saying in the Android devices, sometimes if you were using speech output, the speech and magnification weren't always in sync.
That's correct.
That can be difficult. So I guess it really depends on what your particular vision problem is, as you said, and you have to look at your specific devices to make sure it's appropriate for your special needs.
Well, that's correct. Some people I teach, they can use vision and speech output, so magnification and speech output together really well. Others can't at all because they've got so much sight left and really want to use it, you know, how much ever they can, that they really get disorientated by the speech. So it really depends on the individual needs. And I would advise to just have a look at each operating system on a particular device and just try these things. Try changing the color, try changing the contrast, try changing the magnification, and maybe even in a couple of different apps so that you can see how it reacts.
What about people who have sufficient residual vision that they like to use magnification and speech output at the same time?
So in that case, I would recommend iOS because we found that the magnification in iOS works really well with the speech output, whereas on Android devices, for instance, they can be out of sync.
Now for this week's final item, how you can stay current in terms of the most recent test results from InCobs.
Now people can clearly get the current results that you have. I take it that your testing is ongoing and you're always updating with new information, new devices, new operating systems?
We are, yes. And that's, of course, you know, a bit of a problem nowadays where you have updates of operating systems every few months. It's sometimes an information you put out isn't correct anymore a couple of months later. So, yes, we try to keep in touch and update our test results. And I mean, for instance, currently I'm working on a test about note-taking apps for Android, iOS, and Windows. And, of course, I've tested the note-taking apps in iOS 7 just before 8 came out, and now I've got to do the test again in order to portray the correct result.
So it sounds like people should definitely check out the data on your website before they make a major purchasing decision. That's very useful.
Yes, I would agree. I mean, we try to, you know, keep our finger on the pulse of time. And every time something new happens, just, you know, to reflect that in one way or another. I mean, sometimes it's just that we link to a particular news article or blog entry about a new development. And sometimes we just publish a whole test that we did ourselves. So whatever it is, our aim is to be really on the dot regarding the website.
Great.
If people wanted to get the actual results of some of these tests and the specific information, where would they go?
Well, the web address is www.incobs, that's incobs.de. And there you can click on English and tests and you'll find them. It's a very well-structured website. So that's the way how to get there.
And can you give the URL for the parent organization as well?
Oh, that's www.dias.de.
And is there an email address where people can submit questions?
Yes, that would be info@incobs.de. That's if you want to submit questions or have any comments about the website in general or the project. If you want to leave a comment on any of the tests, then of course we have a commenting function on the website.
And although we neglected to get this in Robbie's voice, they are also on Twitter, and you can follow them at Incobs, I-N-C-O-B-S.
As usual, we'll have all of that contact information and all of the links that Robbie referenced in our show notes associated with this show. And I just want to confirm what Robbie said. I went to the English version of their website, and it is very well laid out and very well structured, very detailed, telling you exactly how the tests were run, what devices they were run on, and exactly what the test results were on each of these devices.
That's it for show number 1448. Next week on Eyes on Success, we'll be talking about tablet comparisons for blind users. Selecting the right tablet for the needs of a blind person using speech output can be just as confusing and difficult as for somebody with low vision using magnification and color controls. We'll speak with Robbie Sandberg of the Information Pool for Computer Technology aimed at blind and partially sighted people, whose German acronym is INCOBS, about their test results to help you choose the tablet device that's right for you. If you have any questions regarding something you've heard about on the show, or you'd like to share an idea for a future show, send an email to hosts@eyesonsuccess.net or call us at 585-258-0333, and we'll try to address your question in an upcoming program.
You've been listening to Eyes on Success, hosted and produced by Nancy Goodman-Torpy and Peter Torpy and distributed by WXXI Reach Out Radio. For detailed information or a full archive of programs, visit www.eyesonsuccess.net. You can also follow us on Facebook and on audioboom.com at Eyes on Success or Twitter at @_EyesOnSuccess. We hope you will join us again next week for more information and updates on products for accessible living. Thanks for listening to Eyes on Success and have a nice day.